Monica finally resting on the number 24.
Previously on 24.
This was the last model the Soviets produced.
Is this what you need to reprogram the trigger?
Yes.
So in a little less than an hour, it will detonate. It'll strike a blow that the Americans will never forget. When you're finished, meet me at the safe house.
I think some people in this place have a connection with the terrorist attacks.
How would you know that?
There was one phrase they used several times. Hamza, Zawar, Ziyada. Pass that on to the FBI.
I've just approved a written agreement with Assad.
I am prepared to offer you full protection and a pardon for all crimes or acts of war in the past. Is that acceptable to you?
I need to see this pardon in writing.
You were right about Curtis and Assad having a past connection.
Curtis was in the army just after Desert Storm.
His squad was ambushed by Assad's people. They killed five of Curtis's men and took
two more hostage.
Assad's lieutenant personally beheaded them both.
Oh my God.
Still don't remember.
Special Forces Battalion.
Curtis, put your weapon down! Stay out of this,
Jack!
I can't. I gave him my word that we would protect him.
I can't let this animal live.
Curtis didn't leave you any choice.
I'm gonna keep trying to tell myself.
We're gonna find that suitcase, Nuke, because of you, Jack.
Tell the President I'm sorry. I can't do this anymore.
Mr. President, we believe we've found the suitcase, Nuke.
Attack team is ready.
Jack looks up in horror at the rising mushroom cloud, as do President Palmer and his aides.
I just got a message from the FBI. It's some Arabic phrase.
Hamza Zawar means five visitors.
Saad said visitor was a code word for weapon. Four more of these things out there.
The following takes place between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m.
In the Oval Office.
The unthinkable has happened. Terrorists have exploded a nuclear weapon on our soil. Over 1 square mile of Valencia, a suburb of Los Angeles, has been destroyed by the most devastating attack in the series of terrorist activities that began 11 weeks ago. And one can only imagine the cost in lives and the suffering of survivors. Judging from the direction in which the mushroom cloud is heading, winds from the south may be blowing the airborne radiation away from the more heavily populated areas.
How many people died in this?
Initial estimates, no less than 12,000.
Mr. President, I just got off the phone with Bill Buchanan at CTU. He has intel that four more tactical nuclear weapons were stolen along with the one that went off.
Do we have any idea where they are?
We do not.
I want a meeting with the Joint Chiefs, Tom, right away.
I've already let them know.
Has civilian air traffic been shut down?
Yes. The FAA gave the order as soon as they were informed about the bomb.
Mr. President, given the current situation, we've decided to move you down to the bunker.
All right. But, Tom, I have to get in front of the American people. Ellen, I want to make a televised speech within the hour.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go, Dan.
President Palmer strides out of the Oval Office, his retinue of military officers and other aides follow in his wake. His face set in a mask of gravest concern, he proceeds along a corridor and through the open door of a large lift. CTU staff are glued to the TV screen.
And the Department of Emergency Services and Public Safety are urging everyone to return home. We will have an expert in nuclear physics on our program in just a few minutes.
Nadia,
to talk about radiation.
Have we heard from any of the secondary teams that were converging on Fayette?
We lost communication as soon as the blast hit.
Milo, can you get a visual?
I just checked the satellite. All of our field teams are too close to ground zero. They're all dead.
Morse, what was the last thing you heard from him?
They were engaged with the hostiles.
Which means they were closing in on Fayette. We need to know if he was in the radius when the bomb went off.
Absolutely. Mr. President, your office has been prepared. The continuity of operations plan has also been activated. The Vice President has been alerted and is following protocol. The Joint Chiefs and most of the Cabinet members are on their way here. The remaining Cabinet members are being routed to Site R.
Huge metal doors swing closed.
Right this way, sir.
President Palmer is led through into the sparely but stylishly furnished offices of the bunker. Tom Lennox peers after Karen Hayes as she goes to make a call.
Yeah?
Bill, are you all right?
We're up under the blast.
We're fine. What's going on over there?
The Secret Service moved us down to the bunker, and the President is about to meet with the Joint Chiefs. Do you have anything new?
Here's what we know. The bomb went off as we were moving in on Fayette's safe house.
Do you think their presence prompted the detonation?
It could have. It's possible they were just prepping the bomb in Valencia and hoping to move it to a more populated area.
Is there any chance that Faye could still be alive and have those four other bombs?
We don't know. We're running the intel now.
And what about Assad?
He's on his way here. We're hoping he can help us find Faye.
All right, keep me in the loop. And Bill, please, be careful.
I will.
Chloe sits at her workstation, deeply worried. Morris approaches her.
It's a lot to process.
So many people.
Yeah.
And Curtis, I can't believe this.
I know you and he were friends.
Why do people I know keep dying? Did you find anything out about Fayed?
No, we're still positioning satellites. We don't know where he is yet.
We've got massive packet loss. Do you want to help me boot up routers?
Who wouldn't?
Open Attitudes 5.
Okay.
I just have a really bad feeling about everything. Did you know Jack quit?
Yeah, Buchanan said he's off channel. What's that all about?
I'm sure it's because he was forced to kill Curtis.
You know I'm here for you, right?
Yeah, I do.
At 10:07, the inhabitants in the area around the nuclear blast are being hastily evacuated. A mother stands calling to a young blonde-haired girl across the street. The girl runs into the road and is almost hit by a red van which swerves to avoid her. In the passenger seat sits Fayed on the phone.
Authorities discovered our location. The bomb never reached its target.
Damn it, Fayed. I sold those weapons to you. The least you could have done was warn me before you blew them up in my city.
I told you it was not supposed to happen the way it happened.
A little late for apologies, don't you think?
My engineer died in the blast. The device used to reprogram the trigger was destroyed as well.
And that's my problem, why?
I have four more bombs whose triggers need to be made operational.
Sorry, Fayed. I'm going to Vegas.
Find me a way, McCarthy. I'll pay you more, double the amount from our previous transaction.
That's interesting. You need someone who could replicate what that device did with modern equipment. We're talking pretty advanced stuff. I'd have to do some checking.
Do you know someone who can do this?
Even if I found someone who can, I doubt they will. This is over the line.
I don't care how you get them to comply. I need someone within the next few hours. Are you in or not?
I'll do some research and get back to you.
The sandy-haired McCarthy gets into his car. Fayed gazes out of the van window at the people fleeing in panic. He looks upwards to where a helicopter is embedded in the roof of a house.
Help! Somebody help! Look, I can't get through tonight! Would you help? I need a doctor! I need a doctor!
Sorry!
The man runs to Jack.
Our helicopter, it went down. And there are two others. One's dead, one's unconscious. I don't know what to do. Please. Please help me.
Sorry, sorry.
Jack snaps out of his appalled reverie and runs after the man. 10:09.
I don't even remember anything hitting us. Things just went out of control.
You were hit by a shockwave.
Shockwave of what?
Nuclear bomb.
What? What are you talking about?
Jack begins to shin up a wooden frame on the side of the house, on the roof of which sits the stricken helicopter. He reaches the first level of roof and runs nimbly up it. He climbs onto the next level and carefully approaches the helicopter, closely followed by the man who begged for his help.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Chuck, is that you?
Yeah, I brought help. We're gonna get you out of there.
Be careful, it's about to fall.
It's jammed.
Unable to get the helicopter's door open, Jack casts around for a makeshift lever. He spots a piece of broken TV aerial and, oblivious to the risk, returns to the teetering helicopter. He succeeds in prizing open the door and helps the pilot out of his belt and gets him out of the cockpit.
Ready?
In the very nick of time, Jack pulls the man free and down onto the tiles as the fuselage of the stricken craft falls to the ground and explodes in a ball of flame.
Stay here. Are you okay?
I think so.
The helicopter keels over onto the pavement. Jack looks down from the roof and gets out his phone.
This guy says it's a nuclear bomb.
It's Valencia. That's where I live. My wife and kids are there. I gotta go kill
them. Can't go back to Valencia. The radiation will kill you.
Get down, you'll die!
CPU.
It's Jack Bauer. Let me speak to Bill Buchanan.
Right away.
You want to save your friend, don't let him go back home.
Jack, you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Where are you?
I'm still in Granada Hills.
Good, you're upwind of the blast.
Don't go any further north.
How bad is it?
It took out a square mile.
Do we know if this was Fayette's endgame?
It wasn't. There are four more nukes out there.
You need to pick me up.
He said you were out.
Not after this.
All right, tell me where you are.
Else in the car.
I'm on the corner of Glasgow and 15th.
We'll be there.
Jack hangs up. His gaze takes in the plume of smoke rising above Valencia. 10:11. End of part one. Part two, 10:16. President Palmer chairs a meeting in the bunker.
Colonel, Fayette has to be at least partially state-supported. Have you guys identified a country?
Not yet, sir. CIA has narrowed down the list. It's on your screen in the short brief section.
Have you been in touch with the ambassadors of these countries?
Yes, sir. They all extend their condolences and have, of course, disavowed any role in the attacks.
Well, we know at least one of them's lying. Maybe all of them.
I'm not sure we know that, John. But let's say it is true. What are you suggesting?
We have carriers on standby in the Persian Gulf. They have the capability of striking multiple targets in each of these states. We've been playing games with these terrorists for 11 weeks now. The only language they understand is force. So let's speak it to them real clearly. I guarantee you that if each of these countries had to sustain three major metropolitan nuclear strikes, they'd no longer have the time or the resources to play in our sandbox anymore. These people want to live in the Stone Age. I say let's put them there.
Admiral, I am very sure that your emotions are shared by many in this room and across this country.
It's not just emotions. Our duty demands we defend.
The President is talking, Admiral. Do not interrupt.
We will retaliate, Admiral. But we will do so, sir, carefully. And with our sights locked on our enemy and only our enemy. Karen, what is CTU learned about the remaining weapons?
They're assessing the initial satellite intel and forensic data.
So what do we know?
We're assuming that the bomb was meant to be detonated in a more populated area and was only being assembled in Valencia.
By the scientist that I released?
Yes. The scientist was killed in the blast, and CTU is trying to determine where Fayed was at the time. The worst-case scenario is that he is still alive and in possession of the remaining nuclear weapons.
President Palmer takes this in under the gaze of his assembled top brass. 10:18. Fayed's red van drives down a lane. Fayed folds up his laptop.
Tell them we're safe. We're moving away from it now.
Fayed's driver dials out on his mobile. Fayed glances into the rear of the vehicle where sit the other four suitcase bombs. At CTU, Assad is escorted into the building. Nadia and Bill Buchanan approach.
Mr. Buchanan, this is Hamrin Al-Assad, Mr. Buchanan's director of CTU.
Mr. Buchanan, I know that you see me as your enemy. But today, I assure you I am not.
Assad extends his hand towards Buchanan, who hesitates, seeming to weigh up all the implications of this action. Finally, however, Bill refuses to shake the hand of his enemy.
Oh, man.
There. All right. Why are we going out of our way treating Assad
one of the most violent terrorists of our time, like a VIP. No holding room. Audience with the White House? Sure. Would you like your mineral water, Mr. Assad? Room 10.
Chloe looks past Morris to where Assad is being led through the operations room under the bewildered gaze of staff members. Bill and Nadia lead him into the office.
Please have a seat.
Chloe and Morris withdraw. Nadia sits at the table with Assad. 10:19.
Ready?
Bill Buchanan, director of CTU, Los Angeles. I'm here with Hamri al-Assad. Less than 30 minutes ago, Abu Fayyad detonated a nuclear weapon in Los Angeles. We have reason to believe he's still at large with four more tactical nuclear weapons in his possession.
Four?
That's right.
Please, you must understand. I came to the United States to stop Fayyad. I knew he intended to inflict damage, but I did not know he was in possession of nuclear weapons.
But he is. Which means there has to be a trail. There had to have been many people involved in the planning of this.
This attack was planned after Fayyad betrayed me 6 months ago.
When he learned of your intention to broker a peace plan.
Which I still intend to do.
But you knew Fayyad was coming to the United States.
This information came to me only days before the first attacks began.
From whom?
I am a well-informed man, Mr. Buchanan.
Are there any other paths you can think of that can lead us to Fayyad?
Yes. The source.
Source of the bomb.
About a year ago, I sent Fayyad to negotiate with an ex-Soviet general about a cache of tactical nuclear weapons. But there was no transaction at the time.
What was the name of the general?
Dmitry Gridenko.
Can you tell me anything about Gridenko?
Nothing. Nothing. I've never met the man.
Continue questioning him. I'm going to take this out.
Gridenko.
You got that clue?
Yeah, I'm opening a Russian database now.
Let me know what you find out.
10:25. Jack is being driven back towards CTU. Milo and Chloe study a screen.
Wait a minute. What about this file here with Gridenko's name on it?
It's a link we're using as a match basis, Milo. Mind your own business.
No, I understand.
Hey. I just compiled a list of names. People in L.A. who had contact with Gridenko on business chats.
That's a lot of names.
Yes. But one of them kind of floated to the top, if you know what I mean.
Put it on Buchanan's screen.
Morris and Milo stand amazed.
Wow.
Yes, they'll fly him up.
I'll let them know.
All right.
Morris just put something on your B window.
Gridenko contacts, good.
Look at number 17.
Chairman of BXJ Technologies, Philip Bauer.
Jack's father.
Did you get anything more specific?
No, BXJ does a lot of business in Eastern Europe. This could be a purely coincidental linkage.
Yeah, what if it's not?
Most of their contracts are highly confidential, but I'll look into it. Calling Jack?
Yeah.
10:26.
This is Bauer.
Jack, Assad just gave us the name of a Russian general Fayyad contacted a year ago about the nukes.
The general's name is Gridenko. Do you know him?
No.
It turns out your father does.
Father, are you sure?
Yeah, Gridenko did business with BXJ Technologies, specifically with your father.
What kind of business?
We don't know. That's why we want to talk to him.
Bill, I don't understand. Is my father a suspect?
No, his name came up on a list of people who have had contact with Gridenko. We're going to question him. I want to check with you first to see if you could shed any light.
I haven't spoken to him for over 9 years.
Bill blinks.
All right, well, we'll send someone over to talk to him.
Bill, wait. I should do this.
Jack, we can run this.
You don't have enough time. He'll talk to me if I go alone.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
All right, tell Stokes we'll pick him up. You take the car. Let me know what you find out.
Thanks, Bill. You need to pull over.
Anacostia Detention Facility, Washington, D.C.
So is he still there?
Yes, he is, but I don't know exactly. The FBI's here. I gotta go. Why did they send you?
Believe me, Miss Palmer, I didn't want to arrest you or your friend. This is Agent Jennings. He'll be working this with me.
Well, what exactly will you be doing?
Well, he'd overheard some conversations about the bombs.
Heard a fragment of a conversation.
If there is an active cell inside that detention facility, we need Waleed to find out more. Agent Jennings will be putting a wire on him.
Putting a wire on him?
I thought you were going to be replacing him with an undercover operative. Waleed isn't trained to do something like this.
Well, he's already in place. He's established a confidence.
How will you be putting a wire on?
Just let us do our job.
In the sunlit compound, Al-Rizani stands by a tree. He gazes across the yard towards where a knot of men, including the dissenter, stand deep in conversation. Al-Rizani moves across towards them.
Not for our own sake. Have
you heard anything more?
About what?
About what's going on out there.
Well, how would I know that?
The group stare at him hostilely.
I was just wondering if you knew anything.
No more than you, my brother.
And the Galan Ma. Lazim Chufai.
I'm sorry, I have to get back, huh?
Sure.
Then what's good?
Waleed Al-Rizani.
Yes?
You and I have to talk. About what? You don't ask the questions, you son of a bitch. I do.
The aggressive Agent Jennings and another FBI man hustle Al-Rizani away. They are followed by the group of conspirators who look on with concern. The FBI men march Al-Rizani into the washrooms.
Get out!
Get out!
We know who you're involved with.
I told you people. I work for the IAA. I'm not involved in any kind of terrorist activity.
You're lying!
I'm not terrorist!
You're lying!
What's he doing to him?
What do you know?
Don't worry, he's not going to hurt him. It's just for show.
That doesn't sound like it's just for show.
Miss Palmer, I advised you to leave. If you want to stay, keep your comments to yourself.
You're going to explain to us what we found in your wallet.
What are you talking about?
You know damn well what we're talking about.
The others watch as Al-Rizani is bundled into a cubicle.
He's wearing you. It's a two-way radio.
Now you're going to tell me what we found in your wallet. You understand me? What do you know about this guy?
This is ridiculous.
Sit down. Tell me now, or I'll take you to the interrogation room. You don't want that.
I'm not telling you anything. I don't care what you do to me.
You will.
You're going to say that I asked about this man. You've got to make them believe you're working for them.
I'll be back for you.
Before leaving, Jennings flashes Al-Rizani the name of Abu Fayyad written on his mobile screen. The FBI men defiantly push through the knot of onlookers and leave. Al-Rizani emerges.
What did they do to you?
Nothing. In fact,
they think they can do anything to us, those bastards.
We've got a clear signal.
Sandra Palmer stares aghast at the blonde agent. Jack now sits at the wheel of a large black SUV. He dials out. In a large old house, a distinguished-looking man answers.
Hello?
Sam, is that you?
Yes. Who's this?
It's Jack.
Jack.
How are you, Sam?
We thought you were... Where are you calling from?
I'm in Los Angeles. Listen, Sam, I need to speak to my father. It's really important. Is he there?
No, he's not.
Where is he?
He left yesterday without telling me where he was going. I haven't heard from him since.
Can I reach him on his cell?
He left it here. I must admit, it's all a bit mysterious. I tried calling your brother. He didn't know either.
Where's Gray?
Well, he was at work earlier, but who knows now?
Can I get a cell number?
Yeah. 818-555-0175.
Okay, I got it. Sam, listen to me. If you speak to my father, tell him to get back to me at this number. Did it show up on your screen?
Yes.
It's really important.
I hope you find your father soon.
I know he would want to talk with you. He regrets the way things ended between the two of you.
Yeah, me too.
Be well, Jack. Thanks, Sam.
A man sits at a desk observing Sam on a screen as he hangs up from talking to Jack. The man makes a call.
Yeah.
It's Liddy. You'll never guess who just called here.
Who?
Your brother, Jack.
Talking about Jack's rotting away in some Chinese prison.
No, actually, he's here in L.A.
How the hell did that happen?
I don't know.
What's he want?
He's looking for the old man.
Yeah, why?
He didn't say, but if I were you, I'd expect a call from Jack.
Your name came up.
Yeah,
We should have killed Jack when we had the chance instead of handing him over to the Chinese.
We tried.
This isn't good. My brother has a way of digging things up that need to stay buried.
Speaking was Graham, the arch-villain of last series. 10:33, end of part two. Part three, 10:38. Jack, driving, makes a call out on his mobile. Jack's evil genius brother gets out of an E-type Jag.
Hello?
It's me, Jack.
Jack?
Yeah.
Sam said you called, but I didn't believe him. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Is everyone safe over there?
Yeah. We're cool, Jack. Wow. Blowing my mind hearing from you like this. Listen, I want you to know that when Dad and I found out that you were in China, we tried everything to get you out. We called in a lot of favors.
Thanks.
Yeah. How did you get out?
Some sort of exchange.
Huh? For what?
I'm not really sure.
It must have been one hell of an exchange.
Listen, Gray, I'm working with CTU right now. I'm trying to help them out with something.
Yeah, Sam said that you were trying to find Dad?
Yeah, where is he?
I don't know. He took off yesterday without saying where he's going. I assume he went to visit one of his girlfriends. He's got a few of them, you know? One of them's really kind of hot. I'd be gonna leave that.
Why'd he leave without his cell phone?
I guess he just didn't want to be bothered.
Gray, I need your help. I need to find him. It's important.
Yeah, whatever you need, Jack. I'll make a few phone calls. Can I get back to you at this number?
Yeah.
Okay, you got it.
Thanks.
Graham looks pensive. Jack makes another call. 10:39, Chloe at CTU answers.
CTU, O'Brien.
Chloe, it's Jack. I need you to help me find an address.
Whose?
Graham Bauer.
Your brother?
Yeah. She'll be in my family file. I haven't seen him in years. Is he still in Malibu?
No, he's in Indian Falls, 226 Pinecrest Road. Do you want his cell phone number?
No. I already have it. I just talked to him.
Why didn't you ask him where he lives?
I'll get back to you.
And California Highway Patrol wants to make it clear that it is essential their emergency personnel be allowed to reach those injured in Valencia. So please keep the streets clear. Once again, a nuclear bomb has gone off in Valencia, California. The president will address the nation within the half hour.
You and your mom doing okay?
Yeah. I mean, on the news, they're talking about nuclear fallout.
Yeah, we'll be fine. Look, in a weird way, we're actually safer now. They've made their big show in L.A. with this nuke. Whatever's going to happen next, I'm sure it's going to be in another city. Okay?
Okay.
Josh, I need to talk to your mom alone for a minute.
All right.
Graham's son, Josh, leaves the luxurious living room. His elegant, dark-haired wife paces nervously. 10:40.
I just got off the phone with my brother, Jack.
Jack? How? I thought the Chinese were holding him.
He's back in Los Angeles.
It's impossible.
Apparently not. He's looking for Dad.
Is he coming here?
Why? Are you hoping he will?
Don't go there, Gray.
We're already there. I'm just looking for a little honesty. You weren't over Jack when we got married, and you're still not.
Okay. How's this for a little honesty? Insecurity in a grown man is unattractive.
She brushes past him, leaving him tight-lipped and suspicious, and goes up the gracefully curving staircase. In the presidential bunker.
The latest terrorist incident? This was a nuclear bomb. Can we call it what it is?
We thought it would give the president a little more flexibility. Once you mention the word nuclear, they're not going to hear anything else.
No, actually, Alan, they will hear the truth. Everybody in this country knows what happened today, and now they're looking for reassurances that no matter how ugly this thing is, the president is in charge.
Listen, we don't have any tangible leads, and confidence is low. Now, if I go out there and I lie to the American public and tell them that we're on top of this, and then some other bomb goes off somewhere, they won't believe a single word I say. That can't happen.
I agree, sir, and that's why I see an opportunity here.
Opportunity?
This bomb is going to remove any remaining doubt that we should be taking more aggressive measures. Suspension of certain freedoms, internment, deportation. Now is the time to start hitting those topics.
Tom, you are counseling that we embrace the politics of fear.
I am saying that we embrace reality. We are afraid. But if fear consolidates public support for measures that save our nation from extinction, then you bet I'm in support of fear.
Tom, the people cannot be any more afraid than they are now. I would like this message to have a calming effect. Yes, we will call this a nuclear bomb because that is what it is. But if we expect civil order on those streets, we cannot stoke the panic. We're not going to mention policy in this speech. The American public just needs to know that every single member of this administration is working with the single purpose of restoring order and making our streets safe again.
Tom Lennox looks skeptical. McCarthy drives.
I don't need a list of names. I need one person who can do the job.
I'll get back to you.
McCarthy swings his expensive silver saloon car across the road to where stands a young blonde woman in sunglasses waiting with evident impatience.
What took you so long? Why couldn't you just pick me up at my place, huh? Instead of leaving me on some street corner looking like some hooker.
Just get in the car.
She puts her stuff in the back and gets in the front.
Talk to me. Like one of your bimbos. You got me? It just said on the news that if the wind changes, we're screwed. I just want to get out of the city and get to Vegas.
We're not going to Vegas.
Oh, no, I'm not going to Palm Springs. Again. No, no, I swear you can just drop me off right here. That place is like assisted living for an entire city.
We're not going there either. We have some things we've got to do here first.
What are you talking about? A nuclear bomb just went off like 25 miles from here.
I'm talking about a lot of money. Now shut up.
Darren.
Stop talking now.
Her eyes widen, but she complies. He dials out on his phone.
Things are looking up.
What does that mean?
It means I might be able to find someone to do your dirty work.
How soon?
I expect to have some good news for you within the hour. Just make sure my money is ready to wire.
The money is ready now. McCarthy will find someone for us. Tell the man these bombs will go off today, as scheduled.
Fayad turns and walks towards a building. 10:49 at CTU, Assad sits at the table in the meeting room. Nadia comes back out.
Finished with Assad. He gave me a few more names, but nothing that he thought would help.
What else did he say?
He wants peace.
You believe?
Yeah.
Bill heads into the meeting room.
The president would like you transported to Washington, D.C. You'll be leaving at a point one evening on a military jet. Some of the information you gave us checked out.
Good luck here in Los Angeles. I hope the worst is over.
Thank you.
It is Bill now who offers his hand to Assad. Assad seems slightly surprised, but after a moment's hesitation, takes it warmly. Assad is escorted out of CTU. Bill, Chloe, and others watch him go with mixed feelings. 10:50, Milo approaches Bill.
Sir, FBI just upgraded one of their leads. They're sending us live audio they think we should monitor.
What kind of audio?
We got a guy wearing a wire at the Anacostia detention facility. I think one of the detainees may have information about Fayed.
Give it to Chloe, make it a priority.
At the detention center, the dissenter talks to the younger man about Al-Razani. You saw what happened. It's the second time they've grabbed him and beaten him right in front of us. We don't know anything about him, Salim. We should just keep our distance. He's one of us, Haidar, look. Haidar's reply to Salim is not subtitled. Al-Razani sits in the compound, nursing his bruises. Sandra Palmer watches him on CCTV, then, unable to contain herself any longer, gets up and crosses to the blonde agent.
Waleed should not be doing this.
He's gonna be okay.
That is not the point.
This was his decision, and it was the right one. Usually it takes weeks or months to develop a cover. He might be able to find something out within hours. If this works, he'll have done an heroic thing for his country.
Please don't give me speeches, okay? If it works, what if it doesn't? What if they find out he's wearing a wire?
The guards inside know what's going on. We'll keep an eye on him.
Right.
You know, it's probably not the best thing that you're here.
I've told you before, Waleed is my client.
I know what you told me. And frankly, that carries no weight with the FBI. Now, let's be honest. The only reason you're here is you're the president's sister.
Then you remember that, and we'll be fine.
You don't have any trouble bending the rules when it's to your advantage, do you?
What did they want with you?
I shouldn't bring you into this.
It's all right. You can talk to me. I heard the
guards say he found something in your wallet.
Yeah, they confiscated it.
What was it? What did he find?
Phone number.
Whose?
Al-Razani feigns reluctance. Salim moves closer to him.
Listen to me. If you and I are in the same situation here, we should know each other. Talk to me.
Maybe I shouldn't have gotten involved. I met some people through my organization.
What organization is that?
The IAA. I'm regional director.
Go on.
Most of what we do has no teeth. I was introduced to a man who was more active. I wanted to help him.
That's good.
We set up a meeting, but before I had a chance, I was grabbed.
Who is this person?
Abu Fayed. You know him?
No. But please, join us for a lunch.
Salim ushers Al-Razani over towards where the knot of conspirators stand in the shade of a large tree. Haydar looks on as they approach. The FBI watch them on the screen.
You did that well.
What happens now?
He's going to have to sell himself to the others before they open up.
End of part three. Through his elegant house and goes to answer the front door.
Jack! I didn't know that you were coming here.
We need to talk.
Yeah, sure, come on in, come in.
Jack enters and looks around, seeming slightly phased.
Damn, Jack! It's good to see you, good to see you.
Jack stands stiffly as Graham gives him an unconvincing hug.
You never been here before, have you?
No.
Oh, God, when's the last time we saw each other?
When Terry died.
That's right. The funeral.
Have you found Dad yet?
No. I made some calls, but so far nothing. Hey, Josh! Come here. Josh, this is your Uncle Jack. You two have not seen each other in a long time.
Jack stares at Josh.
Hey.
Hi, Josh.
Josh reacts to the wrecked skin of Jack's right hand.
How you doing?
Okay, I guess. It's kind of been a weird day.
Yeah, I know.
Josh, give your father some privacy.
Jack and Graham's elegant wife exchange a charged look.
Maybe we can talk later.
I would like that.
Josh leaves.
Marilyn, I'm sorry for the intrusion. I just need to get some information about our father and then I'll leave.
Marilyn nods briefly and then walks away.
It was pleasant, wasn't it? Come on, let's go to my office.
Jack is led by his brother through the corridors of his palatial home. Graham opens a pair of polished hardwood doors and ushers Jack into his spacious and beautifully furnished office.
Have a seat.
Fine.
Okay, so what are we doing here, Jack?
My father used to do business with an ex-Russian general. His name was Gordanko. Do you know him?
No, it must be one of the old guard. You can't believe some of the drinking buddies Dad's cultivated over the years. Oh, there was this one time we were down in Venezuela. This was before Chavez.
Great. I didn't come here to listen to your stories. I'm serious. I need to find Dad.
Okay, we will. Boy, Jack, you can never just walk into a room and get along, could you? I mean, I know, you know, you must have gone through hell in China and everything, but... Look at the bright side. You got out. You're here. You should just relax a little bit.
Jack floors Graham with an expert punch. He then runs to the door and bolts it. 10:56. Jack crosses to a side table and rips a length of flex from a table lamp. He places a chair in the middle of the room and hoists Graham into it. Binds his brother's hands behind the chair back with the electric cable. He grabs Graham's face and speaks close.
If I raise your voice, I will rip your tongue out. Are we clear?
Gray, people in this country are dying, and I need some information. Are you going to give it to me, or do I have to start hurting you?
Actually, you're hurting me now.
Trust me. I'm not.
Jack steps dismissively away, leaving Graham looking disconcerted. President Palmer stands alone in pensive mood.
Speech is in the teleprompter, sir.
With the most recent changes?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Are you all right, sir?
Tom, I can't let the American public see how scared I am.
No, you cannot. But then we just got hit by a nuclear bomb. Bravado would be no more appropriate than fear.
Thank you, Tom.
Palmer throws Lennox a grateful look as the latter leaves the glass-walled office. The president steels himself and heads out. A TV camera is directed at what appears to be a mock-up of the Oval Office desk with its backdrop of the sumptuous silken US flag. The president sits and composes himself as the cameraman signals to him a countdown from five.
My fellow Americans, there is no easy way to say the words America has been hit by a nuclear weapon. But, as you know, this is now a fact. The question remains, what do we as a country, as a people, do about it? How do we rationalize the fear and sorrow that each one of us feels? Do we let our anger guide us down a dangerous path? Or do we come together, continuing to show courage and strength in the face of our enemy? Now, this horrible act of evil which has struck our great nation is the cowardly action of barbaric men. One more thing comes out of your mouth that I don't want to hear, and this is going to start to hurt.
I told you, I don't know where Dad is. What do you want from me?
The truth.
It is the truth, I swear to you, on my family's life.
Jack stares into his brother's shifty eyes.
Not good enough.
Jack moves off to the desk behind Graham, who nervously shifts in the chair, trying to see what is going on.
You brought this on yourself.
Jack places a polythene bag over his brother's head. Graham's open mouth sucks desperately for air, but just fills with plastic instead. 11 a.m., the end.